As President Trump continues his attacks on lawmakers of color, a group of former Obama staffers write an op-ed saying they've had enough.
He sees people of color and he describes them in the most derogatory terms.
For Saturday, July 27th, this is All Things Considered. I'm Sarah McCammon. Most Republicans support the death penalty, but one GOP lawmaker in Kentucky is making both a moral and economic argument against it.
Our state's spending about $10 million a year, and the reality is we're not executing anybody.
Plus, fashion giant Zara plans to go green. Experts say it won't be easy.
Sometimes you can reduce one particular environmental impact, and at the same time, by the actions you've taken, you're actually increasing impact somewhere else.
First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump is unleashing another series of offensive tweets against minority lawmakers. NPR's Shanna Van Sant reports Trump blasted Congressman Elijah Cummings' Baltimore area district as, quote, disgusting and rodent infested.
Trump tweeted denigrating remarks about Baltimore and suggested Cummings spend more time there. Drew Elans is one of 148 African-Americans and former Obama administration employees who wrote an op-ed in The Washington Post this week. The op-ed said Trump's racist and sexist comments are hurting the country. Elans spoke with All Things Considered.
He's speaking about African-Americans and he used such derogatory terms, and to even say that not even humans want to live there begs the question, the humanity of the people who already live there.
Cummings responded to Trump, tweeting that he fights for his constituents every day. Shannon Van Sant, NPR News, Washington.
Protesters in Puerto Rico are calling for the Secretary of Justice to step down. NPR's Marisa Peñalosa reports the calls for her resignation come amid mass demonstrations that have forced Governor Ricardo Rosselló to leave office.
Wanda Vasquez, the Secretary of Justice, is next in line to become Puerto Rico's governor. She hasn't been sworn in, but she's already under investigation for possible corruption by the island's Office of Government Ethics. Thousands of protesters gathered to celebrate Rosselló's resignation. Randall Medina was there. He says Wanda Vasquez needs to go too.
I believe that people are going to keep on rising. People are going to keep on shouting because we got to keep on taking out people that haven't been good to our whole country.
Wanda Vasquez is calling protesters to use good sense and calm. But on social media, the hashtag Wanda Renuncia or Wanda Resign is already trending. Marisa Peñalosa, NPR News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
President Trump says he's agreed to drop the threat of economic sanctions against Guatemala. His administration signed an agreement aimed at restricting asylum applications to the U.S. from Central America. Maria Martin reports on opposition in Guatemala.
Those who oppose the agreement say this impoverished country, from which thousands flee each month, just can't absorb a large number of asylum seekers, that Guatemala isn't a safe country even for its own citizens. But Guatemalan President Jimmy Morales says the deal prevented what he called drastic economic sanctions against Guatemala, threatened this week by President Trump.
Maria Martin reporting. Hundreds of protesters were arrested in Moscow today at a demonstration urging for free and fair elections. They're demanding opposition candidates be allowed to run for Moscow City Council after they were barred from running in upcoming elections. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Mass demonstrations are continuing this weekend in Hong Kong. Police in riot gear fired tear gas after protesters streamed into the same district where pro-democracy demonstrators and commuters were attacked a week ago. Police had banned today's march, citing safety concerns. The demonstration started off peaceful over an extradition bill to China, which has now been suspended. The demands of protesters have since grown to include direct elections and an investigation into alleged police brutality. Astronauts at the International Space Station are unpacking more than 5,000 pounds of newly delivered supplies. Brendan Byrne from member station WMFE reports a capsule packed with cargo arrived this morning after launching from Florida 2 days ago.
Ground crews at NASA's Mission Control in Houston used the station's robotic arm to attach SpaceX's Cargo Dragon capsule to the station's Harmony module. The supplies include clothing, food, and new science experiments, including a 3D printer designed to print nerve cells, muscle cells, and proteins in microgravity. Another experiment is on how moss can help support astronauts living long-term on the moon or Mars. SpaceX launched the supplies under NASA's Commercial Cargo Partnership. The agency pays private companies to deliver supplies to the orbiting outpost. This is the Dragon capsule's third mission to the station. It will remain there for about a month before heading back to Earth, splashing down in the Pacific Ocean. For NPR News, I'm Brendan Byrne.
I'm Windsor Johnston, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Babbel, a European-made language learning program. Babbel teaches practical conversation in Italian, Russian, Swedish, and other languages. Available in the App Store or online at babbel.com. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Sarah McCammon. Michelle Martin is away. We're going to start the program today looking at the Justice Department's decision to resume federal executions. The announcement comes at a time when many states are shifting away from capital punishment, including more conservative ones. This might come as a surprise, since according to polls, including a recent NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll, a clear majority of Republicans support the death penalty. One Republican who does not fit that demographic is Kentucky State Representative Chad McCoy. He hopes his state will be the next to repeal the death penalty. He's the House Majority Whip in Kentucky and also an attorney, and he's introduced his own bill to stop executions. Representative Chad McCoy joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, what did you make of the Justice Department's announcement this past week?
Well, I was obviously disappointed, given that we're trying to get rid of it at a state level. Wasn't surprised given the current administration.
And there are a couple of federal prisons in Kentucky. What are the implications of this announcement for those facilities?
You know, Sarah, that's a good question. And honestly, I don't know. I've not done any federal criminal law, but obviously it's going to crank everything back up again and start costing a lot of money.
And of course, what we're talking about is a federal decision, but you have proposed repealing the death penalty at the state level in Kentucky. Why?
You know, the death penalty, you can come at it from a lot of different ways. And obviously, it's one of those sort of divisive issues. It gets religion involved. It gets a little bit of politics involved. But for me, I come at it from an economic standpoint. You know, the state of Kentucky has for years struggled with our budget. And when you look at a death penalty inmate, just on average, we spend about $12,000 more per year simply in housing them. And Sarah, when you start to really look at the other costs, the court costs, the Department of Public Advocacy spends $3 to $4 million. Prosecutors spend about the same. The courts another $1 to $2 million. So our state's spending about $10 million a year. And the reality is we're not executing anybody. So I think from a just purely economic standpoint, we need to get rid of it, move to life without parole, and use the money for something better.
Representative McCoy, Kentucky currently has, I believe, 31 people on death row. If your bill to repeal the death penalty were successful, what would then happen to them?
Well, the good thing is we would be able to close death row. It's a very costly prison for us. Those folks would then be moved to a maximum security back with other inmates who already have the life in prison without parole. You know, that's not a new category for Kentucky. So we already know how to take care of those folks. We already have the facilities for them. This would just allow us to move those 30 or 31 into that facility.
And why is the death penalty so much more expensive than life imprisonment?
Well, you have a number of different things. First and foremost is just the facility. The death row, quote unquote, is an actual place. And it has stricter guards, a lot more manpower involved. So the simple cost of housing goes up. Now, factor in all of the other costs that are associated with a death row case. You've got the Department of Public Advocacy. They are spending, like I said, $3 to $4 million per year. You've got all of the prosecutors spending an equal amount. and the time that it clogs up the court system all the way through, you know, the local courts, the appellate courts, and the Supreme Court of Kentucky, we're literally looking at $10 million a year just on these, what did we say, 30, 31 cases?
As we mentioned, polls show that a strong majority of Republicans do still support the death penalty. You're one of the growing number of those, though, who have called for repealing it. And there has been a move, as we said earlier, in some red states to repeal the death penalty. What do you think accounts for that shift? Is it just about economics?
No, I don't think it's solely economics. But again, you know, most Republicans are pro-life. And when you start looking at the abortion issue and the life issue, you start to have to ask yourself, am I being consistent when I'm looking at the death penalty? And, you know, for the longest time, the death penalty from the criminal law standpoint was there only for society's revenge. You know, it doesn't serve the other goals of criminal law. There's no rehabilitation of anybody. There's no study that shows that it helps prevent crime. So we're really kind of in that Old Testament retribution. And I think as we move more and more away from that, and then factor in the economics, there's a real reason to get rid of it.
You mentioned, though, religion and politics as well as economics. I'm curious, how do you think about the morality of this question of the death penalty?
Well, you know, I'm a Republican, but I'm also Catholic. So for me, the religious side, if we went there, I would be very much against the death penalty, very much pro-life. And I see the pro-life and the death penalty, you kind of have to be consistent in my mind.
You talk about your Catholic faith and how you look at this question through that lens. Of course, there are people who think that religion ought to be set aside, but I think in reality, many people do look at political questions through the lens of their own values. But white evangelicals make up a big part of the Republican Party. There are a lot of white evangelicals there in Kentucky as well. Of course, many white evangelicals oppose abortion, so I'm curious how you make that case to them.
Well, and that's why I'm quite frankly focusing on the economics, because you and I, reasonable people, may differ on our religion, our background, and how we're coming at it. But when you start talking about the numbers are numbers. And it's pretty clear in a state like ours, where we have desperate needs to use the money in other places to shore up our pensions, you know, to help with our school system. This is simply an area where I think if you look at it logically, we're not getting any benefit from a criminal law standpoint. So let's spend our money somewhere else.
So the fiscal argument might make the case where the moral argument is more complex.
That's right.
And how much bipartisan support do you have? What is the likelihood of this actually passing?
Well, we need to get a hearing first. You know how the committee structure works. And we have quite a bit of bipartisan support. There are a number of Catholics in the Republican majority. Obviously, a lot of the Democrats are for it. So I'm hopeful that we can get a hearing. And I think if we can, we'll see this bill pass.
That's Kentucky State Representative Chad McCoy. Representative McCoy, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Trump administration is greatly expanding the power of immigration officials to deport unauthorized immigrants and to do it quickly. This week, the administration expanded what's known as expedited removal from a limited area along the country's borders to the entire country. And as NPR's Joel Rose reports, immigrant advocates are alarmed at the prospect of more wrongful detentions and deportations.
Expedited removal has been on the books for decades. Until now, it's only been applied to a 100-mile zone along the borders. That's where a man named Elvin was questioned and detained by immigration officials in December. Elvin says he was on his way back to Houston, where he lived, when he was pulled off a bus by Border Patrol agents who asked if he'd ever been deported.
I've never been deported. I've lived in this country since 2007.
Elvin asked that we not use his last name because he's still in immigration proceedings. He told Houston Public Media that immigration officers had him confused with another undocumented immigrant from Honduras with the same name, but they put him in expedited removal anyway, even though it was only supposed to apply to migrants who've been in the country for less than 2 weeks. Elvin spent months in immigration detention while his wife, who was pregnant with their third child, scrambled to find a lawyer.
I cried day and night. What am I going to do now? They're going to send me to my country. My kids are going to stay here. Who's going to help them?
Eventually, Elvin's wife found a team of nonprofit lawyers who convinced a federal judge to cancel his deportation. Customs and Border Protection did not respond to requests for comment. Immigration lawyers say Elvin's case is unusual, but not unique. Mistakes and abuse do happen, they say. And once immigrants are placed in expedited removal, they can be deported in a matter of days without ever seeing the inside of a courtroom. Which is why advocates are alarmed that the Trump administration is expanding these fast-track deportations to the rest of the country.
This is pretty frightening. I think this is one of the biggest, most aggressive assaults, not just on immigrant rights, but on civil rights as well.
Katie Shepard is with the American Immigration Council, an advocacy group in Washington. Under this expansion, Shepard says immigration officials could ask anyone to prove they've lived in the U.S. for more than 2 years, to show me your papers, essentially. She says that could put asylum seekers, green card holders, and even U.S. citizens at risk of deportation.
This could be carte blanche to racially profile people of color in the United States who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's exactly what we could see happen.
We don't racially profile, okay? We conduct targeted enforcement actions. We know who we're going after before we arrest them.
That's Matthew Albence, the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, speaking on a call with reporters this week. Albence says expedited removal only applies to immigrants who are in the country illegally, mostly people who've already been charged with crimes.
The individuals that would be subject to this expedited removal are the same individuals that are subject to enforcement action today and were subject to enforcement action yesterday.
It's not just undocumented immigrants and their lawyers who are worried about this change. Sarah Saldana is the former acting director of ICE under President Obama and a former federal prosecutor. She says it's one thing for the current head of ICE to say he's only targeting criminals, but
that's not what the president has said, that we're only going to use this authority for serious threats to public safety. It's anybody we encounter.
Expedited removal makes sense near the border, Saldana says, where authorities are more likely to encounter migrants who've just crossed into the U.S. Not so in the middle of the country.
You are more likely to find longer established people in their communities, making contributions, going about their business, working, perhaps having children who are American citizens. That's going to be a real problem.
Immigrant advocates have already said they plan to challenge the expansion of expedited removal in court. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.